Genesis 32 on Through the Word, and the moment that Jacob has been dreading for 20 years is almost here. Jacob is finally heading back to his homeland. But going home means facing his past, facing the brother that may still want him dead. Jacob is not the same man that he was. On this very same road on the way out, Jacob had only a staff, but God met him there, and God was with him throughout the 20 years. That changes a man. But Esau wouldn't know all that. As far as Esau knew, Jacob was still the same conniver that had taken away all that really mattered from him, the one that he planned to kill. How do you face your past? How do you go back to a home that you tore apart? And how do you explain that the you that they knew was a whole different you? I remember my high school reunion, University City, class of 92. It was the most surreal experience of my life, because they all knew unsaved Chris, which was a totally different guy. But how do you explain that to people who have no concept of what it is to be born again or a new creation in Christ? That's essentially the dilemma on Jacob's heart as he treks back the 500 miles to home. The chapter begins with a visit from the angels of God, perhaps reminding Jacob that he's not alone on his journey. And then in verse 3, "And Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom, instructing them, 'Thus you shall say to my lord Esau, Thus says your servant Jacob, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed until now. I have oxen, donkeys, flocks, male servants, and female servants. I have sent to tell my lord, in order that I might find favor in your sight.' And the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, 'We came to your brother Esau, and he is coming to meet you, and there are 400 men with him.'" Jacob had had no contact with Esau, and the first messengers were sent in hopes of softening things up a little. Jacob's words are dripping with humility and trying to hide fear. But the report that Esau has 400 men coming out has Jacob in a serious panic. In great fear, he splits his household into two groups, but he has to press on. God told him to go. So in verse 9, "And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, O Lord who said to me, return to your country and to your kindred, that I may do you good. I am not worthy of the least of all the deeds of steadfast love and all the faithfulness that you have shown to your servant. For with only my staff I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two camps. Please deliver me from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, that he may come and attack me, the mothers with the children. But you said, I will surely do you good and make your offspring as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude.'" This is an honest and very candid prayer from Jacob. He's scared. He really believes that his whole family could die here. So he reminds the Lord of his own word. "You said, go back. You said, I will make your descendants countless. So God, save me. No one will count my descendants if we all die today." Now, this is a prayer I can relate to. When it looks like I'm about to hit the end, I remind God of his promises. Not because he forgets, but because I need to remember. And I need to remember that God remembers. Jacob is pouring his heart out, and he is proclaiming his own faith. He's scared, but he still trusts God, and he's still moving forward. Now that's courage. Jacob is still afraid, and so he makes a plan to appease his brother Esau. He sends a series of gifts ahead of him: goats, rams, camels. All told, more than 550 animals sent for his brother. And in verse 21, "So the present passed on ahead of him, and he himself stayed that night in the camp. The same night he arose and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 children, and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. He took them and sent them across the stream, and everything else that he had. And Jacob was left alone." So Jacob sends everyone else ahead. Okay, so maybe he's not so courageous after all. Jacob is on his own one more time, on the same lonesome road he had been way back when. Only he wasn't alone then, and he's not alone now. Back in verse 24, "And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of the day. When the man saw that he did not prevail against Jacob, he touched his hip socket, and Jacob's hip was put out of joint as he wrestled with him. Then he said, 'Let me go, for the day has broken.' But Jacob said, 'I will not let you go unless you bless me.'" We've been watching as Jacob's frustrations have built up. Years of bickering between his wives, 20 years of hard work and cold, sleepless nights, cheated by changing wages and yet accused of stealing Laban's property. Jacob was a homebody, not really a fighter, But if you've paid attention, most of Jacob's words have been building up frustration. Am I in the place of God? 10 times you changed my wages. And now his frustration is topped off with fear of facing his own past. So when an unknown man shows up to wrestle, Jacob's ready to fight. And the fight is on till daybreak. What is it inside a man that drives him to fight? Why does he beat his chest at the world and challenge all comers to duke it out? There is a fire inside of man, pent up over 1,000 frustrations about who we are and what we've been through. But who is it that we really want to wrestle? Is it a man? In verse 27, and he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Jacob." Then he said, "Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have striven with God and with men and have prevailed." Then Jacob asked him, "Please tell me your name." But he said, "Why is it that you ask my name?" And there he blessed him. So Jacob called the name of the place Peniel, saying, "For I have seen God face to face, and yet my life has been delivered." So Jacob figures it out. After spending all night releasing his anger through headlocks and half Nelsons, Jacob is disabled at the hip with just a touch. But he still won't let go. When the man tells him, "You have striven with God and with men," Jacob gets a clue. This was no man. Jacob demands to know his name, but he won't tell, as if to say, "You know exactly who you've been wrestling with. Not only all night, but your whole life." Jacob finally understands. It was God all along. Every man must come to a point where he realizes that all of his fire and all of his struggle is ultimately with God. And there will never be an end to it until we wrestle it out with God himself. Life is a battle, and faith is a fight. Even Paul looked back at his life and said, "I have fought the good fight." It is not a fight to win, it is a fight to stand. And even when we limp, to hold on to God to the very end, to refuse to let go without a blessing, to overcome all that life throws at us, and ultimately, to see God face to face. Jacob walked away that morning with a limp and a new name. Humbled and broken, and yet somehow in his brokenness, I believe that he was finally made whole.
Join us next time as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the word.